With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, I'm Scott Sosh.
And I'm Evan Novi Williams, and you're listening to the Sportacast.
All right, good one, Evan. You are in your car in the Subaru. No, they do not sponsor us. We just say it because you're actually sitting in your car. And we are joined by my longtime friend, Scott O'Neill, CEO of Harris Blitzer Sports and Entertainment, the big boys, the parent company of the Sixers and the Devils of the National Hockey League. Scotty, thank you so much, my friend.
Love being here. Love the work. Love the explosion of Sportico. It keeps us up to date, informed, and on our toes for sure.
Also not sponsored content. Thank you very much. So you know what? Maybe we'll mention his book. He was just nice to us. Should we mention the book? Like, do you even
Let's
care
do
if
it.
We mention? Look, move to your right. There you go. Be where your feet are. Now, you and I have talked so many times about David Stern, and some of the guiding principles of David's leadership were fear and intimidation, and he made no apologies or secrets. You don't strike me as somebody who wants to rule by fear and intimidation. What would your ethos be for leadership?
My ethos would be for leadership. If I were advising leaders, I would say, find your authentic self. If you are a fear and intimidation guy, don't try to be a rah-rah guy. If you're a rah-rah guy, don't try to be a huggy-lovey guy. If you're an accountability guy, don't try to be somebody else. You find out who you are, and then you surround yourself with people who can complement your skills and provide other kind of a platform to create a culture that is one that you want to, that you want and admire and think that drives your best performance. In some change situations, I can be very difficult and tough. In others, when things are more stable as they are now, we definitely have a different environment. But I don't want like the kind of kumbaya, let's sit around the campfire and sing songs and roast marshmallows to take away from what a high performance culture is. Because I've been through two pretty intense change situations. My current company now, there are 12 employees currently here who were here when I arrived. And that's not a lot. You know, we have over 2,000 employees, 500 full-time or so. And so soft is not, culture isn't soft. Culture is hard. But I don't believe you get the best out of people through fear and intimidation. My notion of people is that we all have hopes. We all have dreams. We want to be treated like people and human beings. And the way I can help you fulfill your dreams is get to know you as a person, get to know who you are, get to know your family, get to know what you want to accomplish in your life, understand what's blocking you from getting you there, and hopefully provide the resources and unlock some of that potential. But I will say that not everybody goes and wants to play for Bobby Knight, but some people do and can and excel in that system. And so as a manager and leader, you definitely need to be a little more adaptable than the one style and one size fits all. I don't think that works nowadays.
My favorite David Stern story was Heidi Uberoth, former head of international, was scuba diving on vacation. And she popped her head up through the water and the captain of the boat was there and saying, "Hey, we have a ship to shore call. It's David Stern for you." And her line to me was, "I literally knew at that moment there was nowhere I could hide from that man. Like, he was going to track me down." Great, great anecdote. But by the way, Scott, can I freak you out a little bit?
Yeah.
Because you know I've got sources everywhere, right?
Yeah, shoot.
All right. So somebody tells me, because we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. Somebody tells me this morning you were involved in a basketball game where you may have gotten a little scratch, a little blood, but you called a ticky-tack foul. Okay, there's the scratch.
I don't know if you can see that, but
I mean, it's like a flagrant one to me. Yeah, but somebody said, you know, right away, Scott, it was like foul, foul. Like, I don't know if that's the kind of player you want to be.
You know, they say no blood, no foul. I say blood, foul. I'm a simple guy.
Well, the person who told me that, that's why I gave the exact same retort. I'm like, you know, the no blood, no foul, but you drew blood. So, like, it's okay. But, you know.
Yeah, I will say that that game, my brother, Michael, who runs a healthcare tech company in D.C. So after a bad loss last night to the Wiz, I definitely was trying to get out some of that aggression. I do have a competitive problem. I hate to lose. And so we were going full steam. And so it was a 3-on-3 in his court in his house. And I can tell you that there were some real players there and it did not lack for intensity. And yes, they drew blood, but I won a lot of games. I think I was 10-2 for whatever it's worth.
Oh, so you got some rest in between.
Something I learned about you this morning, you don't really operate on a laptop. You go mobile phone only for most of your business. Are you unique in that scenario? That seems so foreign to me. But I'm curious if that is something that you encounter a lot in the circles you run in, or are you the outlier there?
I don't know. I'm a bit of a creature of habit. I like things the way I like them. I think that's not too unique. But for me, I typically travel with two iPads and a phone and have them set up, one for Zoom, one to type notes during it, and then a phone to take calls if the Zoom gets a little slow. But I'm definitely not Mr. Laptop guy. I'm definitely not going to be the next CTO of your company. That's for sure.
Hey, Scotty, let me know if I did well or if I did poorly on this one. And I'm guilty of this. And I read excerpts from your book and I totally get it and I want to live it. And it's just so hard, as you know, where I'm about a year into Sportico, you know, so it commands a lot of your attention. But yesterday I'm in the park with my son and my wife, and we're playing baseball. And of course my phone, bing, and I'm catching and he's waiting to pitch. I said, wait, I'll put the finger, wait, I just have to check this. And that happened quite a few times. So I was there playing, but I wasn't where my feet were. So how'd I do?
Well, you know, I will say that life is a work in progress and you have to figure out, as I say in the book, what your WMI is. So what's your most important? And everybody, and that can evolve over time. I happen to know Kim and Jackson, your wife and son, and they're wonderful. And you have an incredible relationship. And you spend a lot of time with Jackson, carting him back and forth to hockey. And I hope you spend that time wisely. But here's my, I guess, challenge for you is you have to figure out some points that are pure and just the two of you. And if that happens to be when you're driving to hockey practice at 5 a.m., great. If it happens to be when you're carting him to Pittsburgh for a big tournament, fantastic. How much of that four-hour drive are you actually having quality time? That's the thing. You know, and that's the thing for all of us. I wake up in the morning. I've got three teenage daughters. It is chaos in our house, okay? I'm not getting quality time. It's NCAA tournament, survive in advance. Let's just get them out of the house, okay? Then I'm at work, they're at school, they've got basketball, cheerleading, boyfriends, which I don't want to talk about. They've got the world, you know, they've got homework, they're smart kids, they work hard. And then I'm at games. So how much time do I have? And I guess I would challenge you to say, it's like, where is your meaningful time? Like, when are you willing to commit? And are you willing to commit? Are you willing to commit an hour a day to really connect with your phone off? Is the world going to shut down in an hour? I say to my staff, I'll give you another anecdote. So I take vacation. I fully believe that vacation is a source of life. It's like the fountain of youth. It actually increases your ability to be creative, increases your ability to solve creative problems, complex creative problems, and refreshes you, makes you intellectually curious because you have opportunity to read and shut down. Now, when I first got to the Sixers, nobody took vacation. It was a source of pride.
Yeah, so I was going to say, who's doing the poor job in corporate America and in sports? Is it the team that doesn't really convey the notion that, no, we want you to take vacation. It's good for you. Or is it me that demands it?
It's me because I run the organization. And so people are looking at me and saying, like, I want to be like him. Remember when you were 22 years old, your boss would walk down the hallway and you're like, oh, he's wearing a suit with a tie. I need to wear a suit with a tie. Oh, he says hello in the morning. It's a good day for me. We are looking at our leaders and our managers, and we're emulating them because we haven't fully formed who we are yet. And so as leaders and managers of your group, they are looking at you. Are you taking vacation? Yes or no? If the answer is no, they're not taking vacation.
You know, the best line I love, you know, Scotty, I spent a whole career working for Mike Bloomberg, right? Yep. Two things, I mean, that really stick out with Mike. If he's walking in the hall of the Bloomberg building, there's a piece of paper on the ground. Mike detours to pick it up, right? You know, a lot of people just walk right past it. Mike picks it up.
Pick it up. Amen.
I do too. Yeah, picks it up. Yep. And I love this line. I don't remember. I think it might've been the New York Times, but they did a profile of Mike. And the closing line from Mike was, I have nothing in common with people who stand on escalators. And that really resonated with me because it's 20 seconds to take the ride, but Mike's got somewhere to be and something to do. I'm the person in the left lane, excuse me, walking up or down that escalator. And that resonated with me.
Yeah, I love that. The effectiveness, though, is how do you want to be remembered and what do you want to accomplish? And what's most important? I mean, there are 100 ways to do it. One thing I would agree with Mike on and you on is I have never met a successful person who doesn't work unreasonably hard. I haven't. I hope I do, you know, outside of inheritance. And by the way, my dad died broke, unfortunately. So I don't have that. That's not a gift I'm going to be given.
You want a good story from the Soshnik wedding? And a whole bunch of people you know were there. Toward the end of their lives, my parents are both deceased. I was sort of giving my dad money every month to help them get by. And my mother floats over at the wedding and we call Kim over and she and my father hand me a check for $10,000. And my mother gets the big grin and she floats. I mean, she's not even on cloud nine. She went through nine. She's on cloud 11 and floats away. She then moves out of earshot. My father turns to me and says, rip that up. To which I responded, no kidding.
I love that. No, that's wonderful. So working unreasonably hard is kind of the point of entry, right? That gets you at the table to have a career. It doesn't guarantee you a career, but it gets you at the table. So I'm not saying not to work hard. I work quite a bit, and I love it. It's a passion of mine. I know you work quite a bit. The question is what time are you willing to commit to be fully present and grounded? And what impact do you think that will have, not only on Jackson, but also on you? And that's what you have to answer for yourself. Nobody can answer that. And I will just assert that for me, I was going through my day of chaos. When I get home, how much time do I actually have that's meaningful with my daughters? And there's some exercises in there. Like I had this one exercise at this camp, it was a YPO camp in Ohio. And they got all the dads together and they separated the daughters. My daughter was 11 or so at the time. And they said, okay, you're going to be with your daughter. This is the last time you're ever going to speak to her. What are you going to say? And what crushed me about that was one, I was fumbling. But two, I hadn't had that conversation. Like, why hadn't I had that conversation? Like, why hadn't I told her? And my three things were family, everything's going to be okay, and anything, anytime, call me. So now those are three simple things that I delivered in a pinch, and I was stressed about it, you know? But I think about it, like, how many meaningful conversations have you had with the people that you think are most important? When's the last time either of you, Scott, you just mentioned your mom's passed away, sadly, but when's the last time either you text your mom or your sister or your mentor or your friend just to check in and say hello and that I love you and I appreciate you and thank you? You know, when's the last time you texted Mike Bloomberg and just said, hey, I just want to tell you, you made my career? Like, and it's not just about Mike Bloomberg or your mother. It's about, like, how can we connect better? And how long does that take you? What if you committed 60 seconds a day to connect with one person through text that just popped in your head or you had a prompting? 60 seconds? Here's the thing. I send a note. I do this when I talk to big groups. And I always say to them, hey, if your mom texts you back, hun, is everything okay? You got a problem.
Yeah.
That's a mother, right? But like, what about when you're on a Zoom and you know that your friend, she hasn't had her video on in 2 weeks? You know something's up, right? Or how about when their voicemail box is full? Something's up. Or how about when they haven't texted you back in 2 weeks? Something's up. What are we doing about it? Like, how are we accountable to helping? Like, how can we be more aware and connect? And I think that very connection in the face of coming out of COVID, where we've been completely isolated, we're walking into grocery stores masked up, kind of looking over our shoulders, looking to get out of Dodge as quickly as possible. Like, we need each other. Like, we have to be more aware and we have to be more connected. I mean,
I'll let Evan bring it up to you. I cheat. I do in conversations with people. I write down family members' names. I write down has a soccer game in 2 weeks, has a championship, has this, how they do on the test. I cheat and write it down because I know I won't remember, but I can reference back and then at least follow up.
But I learned that from you, Scott.
There's a reason why he's good at what he does.
Birthdays and things like that. I do the same thing for sure. So you're talking about, Scott, a lot of the things in your life that you can control professionally. That includes people who work with you, underneath you, the teams that you oversee. One area that's kind of a gray area is the fans. I imagine it's a little bit harder to control them, and it's topical right now. In the past week or so in the NBA, we've seen kind of an ugly series of incidents from fans' behavior in various arenas. Unfortunately, the 76ers have not been immune from that in the past week. I'm curious, Scott and I talked about this on the podcast last week. Do you think this is related to fans coming back to the stadium after a year not being able to? Is this just a matter of the players themselves being more outspoken about what they find to be acceptable and not acceptable during games? What do you attribute this kind of past week to?
Good question. And hopefully this is a passing fancy and we won't have to deal with this again. The players have a right to have a safe experience and the dignity that they have earned to play basketball in arenas, home and away. And I think there is a bit of a different energy right now with the fans. I think some of that, you know, has been channeled in the right ways. And that is, the crowd is louder than I've heard it. When we were at 25%, it felt like 18,000 were in there. When there were 50%, it felt like there were 30,000 in there. And I'm not kidding. And when we open up tomorrow at 100%, I think they're going to blow the roof off that place. So in terms of home court advantage, it's wonderful. In terms of getting the players hyped, amped up, fantastic. In terms of like turning our game entertainment people loose to really like set the stage, wonderful. And I don't want the actions of, you know, five people to define the NBA fan. I don't think that's fair. I really don't. You know, we're fortunate enough today. It's when we had our incident in Philadelphia, when security looked up and they were there very quickly, everybody pointed to the guy. It was almost like a bad movie, you know? And I'm like, good, because these fans aren't going to tolerate it either. But I think we need to do better and be better and get better. You know, security was pretty beefed up, and we had a full group of security for 50% fans, and they closed really quickly. But, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, that behavior can be ever tolerated on any level or every front. And, you know, growing up, I'd always heard stories in South America when they used to play the Davis Cup down there, like throwing quarters at players. And just, there was some wild stuff. I know in basketball, some friends of mine played in Europe, and there were some batteries chucked at them. And, you know, I always almost couldn't believe the behavior. And to see a water bottle thrown or someone spitting, and obviously the popcorn incident in Philadelphia, it's just, to me, it's completely unacceptable. And I'm glad, like, that everyone is consistent. Like, people are teams, leaders, those of us responsible for doing what we do and how we do it are saying, no, you're out and we don't want you back. And I think to the extent we can do that, we'll see very few problems going forward.
So how do you kind of help harness all the good things you're talking about crowds right now while kind of helping avoid the bad? Is it reaching out to season ticket holders and signs around the stadium? Kind of how do you communicate to fans is unacceptable moving forward?
Yeah, no, we do all the stuff. So we send, you know, we have the signs up. We play the video before the game. We send text alerts. All that stuff is wonderful, you know. But fan is, you know, derived from the word fanatic. And this is maybe has taken on these games has taken on a bigger importance. What I love about sports and music and entertainment, and what I've kind of learned, is that the mission for what we do, like the value, the reason we do what we do, is that we get to create community and we can bring people together. And so there'd be a perfect stranger and you high five and hug them and you scream and dance and shout with perfect strangers. And you chant during the games, all that stuff that just brings us together and creates one, is so powerful and so needed. And that drives adrenaline, you know, and there's so much pent up intensity. I think that the 0.1% takes it over the line. And that's what we've seen. But I just don't want that to define who we are. Like, I don't, because it's not true. It's like we had 11,000 people in the venue and one bad actor shouldn't define an entire city.
Oh, fans have been acting like morons forever. They've just been beating each other up in the parking lot and in the corridors. I mean, it's getting attention now. And of course, it has to stop and shouldn't be tolerated. Kick them out. Don't let them in, of course. But this is the business of sports, Scotty O. Tell me about your deal making. Where are we? How do franchises rebound? You got to earn some dollars and cents. I mean, sports and entertainment was hit almost harder than any other sector due to COVID. Where are we and what's your outlook?
Yeah, I don't know if we're a good measuring stick. We kept our team in place. You know, we kept talking about as a leadership team is, can we keep the machine? That's what we kept saying. Can we keep the machine intact? And by machine, we meant the sales and marketing machine. I think that we have built an elite sales and marketing team, and I did not want to lose them. I kept my, and look, we were under a tremendous amount of financial pressures, as everybody was.
If I may, Scott, if I just cut in, where are they going to go?
You know, amazingly, but you know, it's not about us, them leaving, although we've had some attrition. It's really about do you knock out 20% of your staff or 40% of your staff? I know a friend of mine was down to 30 employees, you know, in an entire organization. So I, you know, and my fear is, I mean, again, I don't mean to get too down in the weeds, but you know, a first year rep, a second year rep, a third year rep, a fourth year rep, and a fifth year rep all sell at different levels. And it's about 3.5 times from first year to a fifth year. That's just on the ticket side. On the sponsorship side, it's even more pronounced. And so I didn't want to have to start from scratch and start over. I thought that would set us back 3 to 4 years. And so we kept our team intact and in place. And the sales reps suffered. You know, if I had to have one thing back, I would have like taken up a bonus plan or made up some sort of way to get them a little whole, because we did lose a lot of good sales reps. But we'll exceed 19-20 pretty considerably in 21-22. So we're in really, really fine shape in terms of revenue and performance.
What about on the high end though? You're talking about first through fifth year sales reps. I get it. What about at the CEO level? What about you peer-to-peer CEO levels, big dollar deals like you used to do at Madison Square Garden? I mean, you did that Chase deal at MSG. That's a very big sponsorship. What are you hearing from companies now when you're asking them for big spend?
So we're out there. I mean, we are, it's too soon to say, but we have done 3 deals in different parts of our business that we're really proud of that are significant. So at least from what we're experiencing, and again, I don't mean to represent, like I've been on the other side of this fence and I've been a low demand team in a low demand market. But right now we are cooking, man. The 76ers, I mean, it's the number one team in the East. We've got 2 global superstars and all the stuff we talked about 8 years ago has come true. You know, the value of the organization's up 6 times in 8 years. And so this is a high, high demand property. And so whether we're talking to a company in Hong Kong or London or Bakersfield, California or Chicago or in our backyard in South Philly, there seems to be an insatiable appetite for demand for our property.
One of the things that some of your peers are looking at as we talk about kind of the financial struggles of the past year, the NBA has been pretty active in opening up the opportunity for private equity to get involved. I think the Golden State Warriors were the first to do this, an investment from Arctos Partners. Do you think that, you know, we're going to see private equity invest in half the league, a third of the league, more, less? And how do you think that maybe changes the business practices once, you know, investment firms that have maybe a different investment thesis and time horizon start taking kind of big chunks of NBA teams?
They don't seem to be taking big chunks. They seem to be taking under 10%, and their rights are very limited. And it's somewhat acts as permanent capital. So for teams, for CEOs, or for managing partners of organizations, it's a great way for growth capital. I mean, it is a very efficient way to grow a business. And I think the best thing it does is support the valuation growth. I mean, you've seen, you know, I think when I got into the league in 1992, I believe the Jazz were sold somewhere around that for $13 million. Okay. And so now when you think the Jazz just sold for what, 1.65, that's pretty good growth. You know, we're valued considerably over, you know, what, some 2.3, 2.4, depending on where you look. I always look at Sportico. It's the only place I would go.
You beat me to the line.
For my valuations. But these are organizations that, you know, only, I mean, when I started 8 years ago, I think the valuation was somewhere between 350 and 400 million. So you're talking 5-6 times growth. So how are you going to support continued growth? Well, you've got to do it in different ways. One way is to obviously take in some outside capital. So that does it, because it sets the values. The other is to use that and leverage that capital to go build. Do you want to build a new arena? Do you want to start a real estate company? Do you want to acquire theaters? Do you want to build the next D2C platform to take advantage of what's the melting ice cube, formerly known as the RSN? Like, how are you going to actually build value in your organization and consider it a platform, and it's a platform for growth in a market? So that's how I see the world and the landscape. And so I love the investment from outside.
Yeah, these are platform businesses. I mean, that's what we've got these days. So my question to you is, where is the pressure? Because we have not seen an upside down sale, but where does the pressure come from? And I'll look at one sector specifically only because it's the largest provider of revenue, and that's the media. You know, we're already hearing about the next NBA TV deal, 3X, whatever it might be, and certainly the NFL did well. Where do you see the pressure coming from? Because I don't see it coming from the media, frankly. You can talk about diminution of eyeballs, whatever. The value of those eyeballs is going up. I don't care if it's on linear TV, moving to streaming. I don't see those numbers going down. What do you see?
I couldn't agree more. So I'm not sure where the pressure is or how you're asking about pressure. I just see opportunity. I think internationally, the opportunity internationally, we've barely scratched the surface in the two leagues that I operate in the National Hockey League and the NBA. Love what the NBA has done with China, creating, you know, $4, arguably $5 billion worth of value very quickly. Love what the NBA is doing with the African Basketball League. I think there's tremendous opportunity there, which seems very straightforward and obvious. But man, what a haul to get it up and going. It seems like it's going to be a tremendous success.
Are those international endeavors a harder sell for some teams? I do a lot of reporting in college sports, and the Pac-12, for example, has done a lot of work kind of pushing international expansion, particularly in Asia. And I know there are a lot of people that kind of pull strings in the Pac-12 who get frustrated because that's a lot of money that gets spent right now that maybe doesn't realize revenue immediately. It might actually not even kind of hit the books until after these people have moved on. I'm curious if you look at, obviously, investment in China, investment in Africa, overseas investment is money that maybe doesn't come back next year and doesn't come back in 2 years. It comes back in 10 years or 20 years and 30 years. Is that often a hard sell for owners? Or do you think everybody's kind of aligned on, we need to invest this money now, even if we don't see it back for a long time?
Well, first off, you know, God bless the commissioners. I mean, they have to keep 30 to 32 different managing partners, you know, somewhat aligned in terms of what their vision is. And I think that's very difficult. So no, I don't think everyone is aligned. I don't think anyone, it's very rare that everyone is aligned on any issue. But most business people and business leaders understand that if you're standing still, you're moving backwards. And those of us that have had success in this business know that, you know, you can, you know, you sell all your seats, you know, and you can take prices up on merch, or you can take prices up on food, and, you know, your sponsored business is going up, clipping up at 7, 8, 10%. You know, you got your media deal, but that's, you know, every, call it 10 years, get your arena deal every 20 years, but we're all looking for growth. And there are opportunities to do that, but that's the league's job. That's what they do. They set our course for the future. I mean, the CEOs in this industry are looking to grow asset value. And to do that, we have to look out of our little pockets. And I think the NBA in particular has done an extraordinary job setting those opportunities. But is it easy for them? I would argue that I don't work there anymore, but I would imagine they would say no, it's very difficult. And if they said, do we have consensus, all 30 teams in line, like cheering and clapping, hey, let's go to South America next? Probably not. I mean, like I said, I don't know. I can tell you, like, there was a pretty highly contested debate on China. And of course, I mean, that's the great thing about these leagues. I mean, you're sitting around the table. I've been in these Port of Governors meetings for 15 years. It's incredible. I mean, you literally have the leaders of industry in one room, and they're very strong personalities, and they're all extremely bright and extremely confident, and they have a different view on how the world should be shaped. And the commissioners kind of facilitate debate and then eventually make the call. So for me, I mean, it's been an incredible education watching that happen. But for me, I love growth. That's why I came here and worked for Josh and David, because it was just simply a basketball team practicing at a medical college with one court. That's what I walked into, you know, with KPIs. I mean, every KPI was the bottom of the league. We were operating like we were a small, low rev team. And I was like, this is Philadelphia, you know? So I think that, you know, I think most of us in this business look for a growth opportunity. I mean, that's what we do.
Yeah, Evan, imagine somebody having a difference of opinion on China. I'm just wondering if anybody in the Sixers organization has any opinions on China. I'm not familiar if maybe anybody in the organization has any opinions on that subject.
China has been, we played in China a few years ago, and we've certainly, you know, with hiring Daryl, have been put in an interesting situation. But I will say, like, we have such a Western view. I mean, I'll say I haven't been to China several times now. I was with Mike Ma, who runs the league. NBA China. Has been a longtime friend. And he actually said that to me once. I said, no. I said, I'm just trying to see the world as it is. And he said, you know, don't have such a Western view. And I think what he meant was, it's like, we want immediacy. We want what's right now, right? It's like, that's the West. Like, give it to me right now. It's not 15 minutes of fame anymore. It's 15 seconds. And we want our deal tomorrow. And what he's saying is play the long game, you know, be patient.
Yeah. I think the platforms even represent that. You've gone from linear to TikTok, like literally 15 seconds of fame.
Yes, you're right. But do the right things. Like we have an incredible group led by Sunshine Rogers that does amazing content, John, amazing. And they're doing deals. So for me, like we have a long view. And there's always going to be a debate, and the good news is in this league is you have the free will and a platform to say what you want to say.
Speaking of long, Scotty, we've gone longer than we usually do on this podcast because, like, you and I and Evan, we could go another 2 hours. I mean, it's simple. This is the kind of stuff we discuss if we're sitting in a cafe or if we're at the arena. These are the sorts of things that we bounce off each other. But Evan will tell you, by the way, that weird things pop into my head, and most times folks don't say them, but I do. And well, no, you just, the name of the book, Be Where Your Feet Are. And I just want to make sure people understand, because you're never supposed to end in a preposition, that people understand that R is not a preposition. Just in case anybody was wondering and wanted to throw shade on the title of this book, that don't, because R is not, I repeat, R is not a preposition. So there we have it. Again, title of the book, Be Where Your Feet Are. Scotty, thank you for the years of friendship and always being, I guess, present when you and I have our discussions. And now we'll rope Evan into that as well.
Appreciate you both. Love the Sportacast. Proud to be a guest. I hope your listeners take a shot and read the book. And if they don't, I hope they pick up their phones and text their moms and tell them how much they love them and appreciate them. And I hope they send a note or a phone call into somebody that works for them and checks in. Let's be better. We can do better.
All right, Scotty. Thanks so much.
You guys are amazing.
Evan, always one of my favorite people to talk to. You know, I've known Scott a very long time. I mean, it's always fun to see people, you know, in their natural habitat, you know, in the arena. But he and I have had many discussions late at night, after wins, after losses, when he worked at the league, when he worked at MSG, the exhausted after the Board of Governors meetings. but always insightful. So
a very thoughtful guy as well, you know, which is refreshing, obviously, from a media standpoint, but also from a friendship standpoint. It's just nice to have people that are constantly thinking kind of a level deeper than just the exact conversation that you're having.
Yep. All right. So we echo, buy the book. Yeah. Tell them.
Buy the book and text your moms. I'll do the same. I'll do it right now.
You and your mom is a whole separate podcast, but we got to get Nita on the show one of these days.
Someday.
He is Evan Novy Williams on the Twitter at Novy_Williams. I am Scott Soschnick on Twitter at Soschnick. Social media coordinator Cora Veltman likes us to tell you the show is at Sporticast, which is the hub of what will become the Sportico Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.